Welcome to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Lees, a conversation for those who own, manage or protect intellectual property.
Welcome to our podcast. We are diving into the fascinating world of green innovation with a special focus on nuclear energy. We'll be discussing insights from the Appleyard Lees Inside Green Innovation Progress Report, which is the fourth edition, which is a very comprehensive report exploring the latest advancements and trends in many areas and provide insights into how organisations are responding through innovation and investment. The report analyses patent data and industry insights that we've researched, as these are good indicators of the ongoing efforts to address and mitigate environmental impacts. In this podcast, we're talking about energy, and in particular, nuclear energy. But first, let's introduce ourselves. My name is Adam Tindall. I'm a partner at Appleyard Lees. I'm predominantly a mechanical engineer, and I do work on some fission nuclear work. And I'm joined by my colleague, Matthew.
I'm Matthew. I am a senior associate at Appleyard Lees and have had the pleasure of being the primary author behind the nuclear section of the Green Innovation Report. I have background in physics and work across a multitude of sectors spawning from that, including electronics, physics, software, lots of different technologies, but I have a particular passion for nuclear fusion and do quite a lot of work at the moment in that area.
Let's talk about why we chose nuclear energy as a subject and how it kind of fits into the broader context of green innovation.
Of all the topics we could have chosen to talk about, it's a good question as to why this one. There's a multitude of reasons. One is that you and I work in this sector, or within technology in this sector, Adam, on a day-to-day basis. So it's sectors that we're knowledgeable about and think we can provide useful insights into. I think that's a pretty clear starting point. But more wider than that, you know, the green innovation energy side of things talks about hydrogen batteries and nuclear technologies. Why nuclear in amongst those three? I think it's because, for me at least, nuclear energy represents one of the greenest forms of technology, barring, I'm going to put fission radioactive material way to one side on that for a slight second. In terms of if you're looking strictly at sort of carbon production, it's incredibly clean technology, and in that context is really some of the technology that, you know, going to be pushing forward in the future to solve the energy crisis for the human race. So I think it's an incredibly important topic to be talking about generally, and an interesting one to look at what's going on technologically.
That's right. There's so much potential there, isn't there, for, you know, providing so much energy without the need for fossil fuels, and maybe even, you know, reducing a reliance on wind power and, you know, less predictable energy sources.
Most renewable forms of energy are intermittent, in the sense of you don't know whether you're going to have a decent tide or a decent wind flow to power generators, whereas nuclear energy gives you continuous production so that, you know, we don't have to worry about those sorts of things. And you're absolutely right, Adam.
I think my interest in it was really spurred on. I had a trip down to Culham to the research centre there and actually saw the fusion reactor they have. And after that point, I was just hooked on it as a subject, partly because it seemed, oh crikey, you know, it's sort of close now, you know, the many benefits that it has over fission energy perhaps. So let's explore the more detail of the report itself then, which is all about innovation in these areas, and we focus mainly on fusion. In the report, what did you find were the kind of key areas of consideration where the innovation seems to be happening?
Good question, Adam. Yeah, guilty as charged. The report's a bit more fleshed out on the fusion side, as that's my primary interest. Key takeaways are that if you're looking at the innovation, I think it's a very exciting time to be in the fusion sector, basically. for many, many years. You've had, primarily driven by sort of governmental type institutions, this steady state, if you will, fusion, technology innovation, trundling along, just, you know, making small increments here and there to try and get fusion energy as a concept working. Those who've spent any time in the fusion, or even, you know, on the peripheries of fusion energy, will know the great joke is that fusion energy is always 40 years away. It doesn't matter what today is, it's always 40 years away. So, you know, it was 40 years away in the 80s and they expected it by now. And for many still working in the sector, it's 40 years away now. And, you know, we won't be realistically talking about things until 2060 possibly, or 2050. But I think the, you know, one of the main takeaways from the report is that it's actually, things are a bit more exciting than that perhaps pessimistic view, and things are moving, as I say, technologically, certainly apace. There's real energy, you know, no pun intended, in the sector at the moment, that we can achieve fusion energy quicker than that 40-year cycle. And so there's been lots of startups recently coming in and saying, right, well, you know, existing thinking is 40 years, okay, maybe now more like 30 in some corners. For example, the STEP project in the UK is targeting energy production in 2050 or around that time scale. And, you know, that's the level-headed view on timescales, but they're a government-based institution, right? And they like to be level-headed about those sorts of things. Whereas you've got loads and loads of startups now saying, well, actually, we think we can do something by 2030 or maybe 2035. So we're talking more like a 10-year timescale. And you're seeing this borne out in the, you know, the patent data that we've researched, and more generally how that feeds into the insights from the innovation in the sector.
So where have you seen, which countries are working on it, and, you know, what are the companies that we would recognise who do research in this area? Who are the big players, or who are the surprising players?
Fusion is, or has been, historically very global, and as I say, governmental institution based historically. So, you know, you're talking, like, you know, in terms of like core innovations in the very, very detailed and high physics concepts of nuclear fusion, you're talking about your, you know, UK Atomic Energy Authority and their JET facility. Historically, you're talking about ITER in Europe, you're talking about National Ignition Facility in the US. So, you know, those are the you know, K-Star in Korea and so on and so forth. And, you know, as I say, it goes across, and there's a few Chinese places, big production places as well. There's one in Japan as well, of course. But more recently, yeah, you're seeing this, as I mentioned, this flurry of startups coming through. And there's a couple in the UK that you would probably consider big in the fusion scene. Big players would be Tokamak Energy, First Light Fusion. There are a couple of UK independent or privately funded startups. They take government money too, but, you know, let's consider them. They're private entities at their core. Canada, General Fusion, they're a really big player. Cost to the States, Commonwealth Fusion Systems, absolutely massive in terms of the fusion sector. Looking purely at the patent data for the last couple of years, you see this massive spike in US patent filings, basically. But it's not from the historically big players like Commonwealth Fusion Systems or Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or even the National Ignition Facility, and there's a few other government places that were doing fusion-related stuff. It's not from them necessarily. It's from a flurry of new startups like Helion Energy, Zap Energy, Tay Tech. What's also borne out, you know, we present mostly the numbers in the report, but we have the privilege of being able to dig into, you know, take a cheeky look at some of the patent applications that have actually been filed. What can be quite interesting is that you've got these main themes of fusion energy, you know, whether it's inertial confinement or magnetic confinement, you know, they're the two broad churches, really. Even within that, you know, it's not like everyone's trying to do it the same way. There's actually a lot of patents in there for, like, well, we're thinking entirely out of the box, and we wonder whether we can achieve fusion energy, you know, within these broad church principles, but in a completely different way to how other people in the sector are doing it. It's not that everyone's trying to build a tokamak, or everyone's trying to build a laser facility. There are other concepts flying around within those churches, if you will. And the government institutions have their like their more proven ways that they, you know, essentially those ways will work given enough time and money and effort, and but the a lot of the startups are coming in and really trying to innovate on top of that to be, you know, to find ways that haven't been considered before to achieve this energy production basically and do so quicker. Because of a sort of inherent caution to patent strategy, there hasn't necessarily been that cross-pollinate to other sectors. So it's only very recently, for example, that you see Tokamak Energy coming out with, I forget specific name, but it's something like Tokamak Magnets, which is their, you know, they split off a branch of their company to deal specifically with licensing their magnet technology to other industries outside of nuclear fusion, right? So and that's quite, it's quite a modern development in the fusion sector to sort of think about and do that.
So apart from magnets, are there other technologies which they work on which, you know, have that similar transferable value? Is that really where people are filing patent applications, because they're seeing, they can see there's a within a 20-year commercial use of these, even if they're not being used in power generation?
In terms of other technologies that we see sort of being developed in the fusion space that are relevant beyond fusion, possibly one of the big areas is robotics. There's lots of robotics innovation in the fusion sector. If you think particularly around, you know, you've got this continuously operating reactor pumping out ludicrous amounts of heat, and yeah, the internal components do become a little radioactive. You know, if you think about all the maintenance required for that and how you do that safely, there's a lot of innovation around robotic maintenance, for example. That is a good source for, you know, robotics are transferable to a lot of different industries, you know, whether it's, you know, the use case would obviously be different, but there's a lot of innovation coming in the robotics specifically that, you know, could be licensed out, if you will. You know, that's another area that would be ripe for it, for example.
Yeah, and I think with fission, it's a different set of concerns, isn't it? Because those are up and running now, and okay, the power stations, big power stations are, you know, will be built and last for decades, but there does seem to be a move. There seems to be quite a lot of activity there in different types of configurations of fission reactors, mainly changing the configurations around safety concerns, and, you know, to make them more safe, and by fail safe safe in the true sense of the word is my impression from looking at the data, rather than focusing on the how do we actually get this to work, because they know how to make it work. It's a question of providing the fissile material in the correct form and being able to control it and getting the heat out, and then it being able to shut down in a safe way. That's my experience through working with people. Does that sort of resonate with you in the research that you did?
You're quite right to pick up on the sort of the move to different types of reactors in the fission space, particularly. Historically, we've got quote-unquote big nuclear fission reactors, and more recently our listeners would have seen in the news about small medium reactors. A continuing concept from that is this idea of a micro reactor, and whether you're small or micro is all to do with essentially what is the footprint of the power plant at the end of the day, and how small a space can you fit it into. To an extent, a lot of these concepts are designed around taking over decommissioned older power plants, and can they be fitted into these decommissioned older power plants sufficiently. In terms of the innovation data, what's really interesting is that we see about 5% of the patent applications being directed to those, you know, small or micro concepts specifically, which appears to indicate that the, you know, the innovations that are happening are still quite broad, in that even if the motivation for a particular innovation is a small reactor or a micro reactor, whatever that innovation is probably applicable to the, you know, historically large scale reactors as well. It's not necessarily that the new innovations are, you know, even if a new way of thinking born of the desire for these small reactors has, you know, resulted in some technological advancement, then there's also been the corresponding realization that it doesn't necessarily only apply to these small reactors. And I think that's quite a, you know, it's quite interesting to see that sort of dichotomy bear out between where we know the industry is heading and what we're seeing in the patent applications for technological innovation. And to the second part of your question, which was to do with the, you know, safety aspects, and, you know, this has been a question for nuclear fission ever since the first power plant was developed, right? How do we make sure that this is safe, fail safe, however you want to term it, right? We know it can lead to catastrophic consequences if not checked. So it's always been a concern in the fission industry. And I think it's no surprise that the data bears out that it's still of a really, really high concern to the nuclear fission sector, with many of the more recent innovations, of which there are many, and, you know, the numbers are, for numbers of, you know, patent filings, for example, in nuclear fission are far, far higher than in nuclear fusion. But many, many, many of those innovations are directed towards how do we do nuclear fission safely? How do we continue to do it safely? How do we make it even safer than it already is? Because we think it's pretty safe, but I guess the viewpoint is quite rightly to never say never, and we can always be improving upon things. That is certainly borne out with the fission data we've gathered and researched we've done this year.
So from the report, what would you say are the, you know, the key trends or kind of key observations or the challenges which seem to be being faced by industry and which they're filing patent applications on?
One of the key takeaways, just looking at the overall filing trends, where people are filing, what sort of subsectors they're filing in, who's filing it, so on and so forth. I think the key takeaway is that this is a really exciting time for the fusion sector, particularly with lots of new players in the market coming in, trying to, you know, make their mark. And patents are an easy way to demonstrate, you know, your innovative chops, as it were. I think the difficulty in the fusion market now is going to be, seeing as we've seen this flurry of entrants, how do you distinguish yourself from the others, basically? How do you, as a fusion startup, get your hands on the big pot of money that is potentially going around? And it is a big pot of money that is now being invested in fusion. It was 900 million last year, for example, in private equity being entered into the fusion market. And so the challenge is for those startups, how are you making, you know, enough of an impression? Is your, you know, is the way you're doing things different enough, unique enough, interesting enough, I guess, viable enough? All of those questions to be the, you know, to be the next winner of the, you know, the equity lottery, and, you know, get some of that, the money that's coming in. The fission sector is perhaps not quite so exciting. It's more steady state. Things are progressing in a much the same way as they have previously, you know, a slight decline in innovation in the sector if you look at a, you know, over a 10-year period, but not huge by, you know, it's not a collapse by any means. There's still lots of innovation to be done, lots of interesting technology to protect in that sector. It's just you know, the big players in those markets are still the big players in those, in that sector, and it's you know, continuing to, you know, tread along, as it were.
It is interesting that you can have startups in something with such a huge barrier to entry as fusion, isn't it? It just shows how close-ish people think we are to actually being able to achieve it, that there's that much interest in it, which can only be a good thing. Thank you, Matt. I've really enjoyed that chat. It's been really useful and interesting. So, of course, this isn't the only podcast that Appyard Lees does, and it's not the only one that we do with our innovation report. In the energy section, we talk about hydrogen and batteries. We also have podcasts related to transport and food and materials. So if you're interested in hearing about developments in those technologies as well, then feel free to search and have a listen to those as well. Thank you very much, Matt. Great talking to you.
Thank you, Adam.
Thanks for listening to the Green Shoots podcast by Appleyard Leeds. If you have a question or issue you would like our IP specialist to discuss on the podcast, then tweet us at appleyardleeds or email us at ip@appleyardleeds.com.